Hi, I'm Bob Trumpor, and I'm pleased to introduce award-winning author Steve Steinberg. He's going to be talking about the forgotten team in the 1908 NL pennant race, the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Thank you. So I'd like to take in the next 20 minutes everybody through the 1908 season. We all know the Pirates in 1909, and most of us know that in 1908 it was the Giants and the Cubs and the Merkle game, and this is the final standings of the 1908 season. And as you see, the Pirates, which were obviously not in the major media market of New York or Chicago, ended up the season just at one game behind. I'm going to hit some of the high points, with most of the focus being the latter points of the season. I'm not going to talk about the Merkle game, and I am going to highlight some things that may have been overlooked or de-emphasized over the decades. So let's start off and jump into it. So the competition, Frank Chance of the Cubs and John McGraw of the Giants, both felt that their primary competition was the other guy. And you can see from their quotes here, which I'll let you read. I'm just going to talk while you can read them. And really, there was not much feeling about the Pirates. And Christy Mathewson said he really worried about the Cubs because they'd been champions of the National League for 2 years in a row. The three main characters on the pitching mound this year were these giants of the game. The third one, Vic Willis, not known nearly as much as the other two. And Willis did not have one of his better seasons there. I just pulled Baseball References WAR. This was Mathewson's greatest season. Brown, this in 1909, were a pick'em situation. And these were the guys that we're going to see again and again in the 1908 season. Now, the two big hitting stars this year, and it might even seem counterintuitive or even blasphemous to put Mike Donlin on the same slide with Hannes Wagner, but Donlin was an enormous figure in the game. He hit 351 in 1903. Wagner beat him out for the batting title. He hit 355 in 1905. Wagner beat him out. And in 1908, these were the two fierce rivals for the batting title, Mike Donlin of the Giants. And one of the things that really surprised me weaving through 1908 is that repeatedly New York newspapers said that this was the most popular man that ever played baseball in 1908 for the New York Giants. And this is the era of Christy Mathewson, who we normally assume was the most beloved player of the game. And yet Mike Donlin, who is sort of a footnote in baseball history because some of his darker side got the better of him, but we'll come back to him and the pennant race really shaped up. Here are just a few points in time. Donlin had a big lead over Wagner, and Wagner, by the way, almost retired at the beginning of the season because of a severe arthritic shoulder. When Barney Dreyfus moved his salary from $5,000 to $10,000, Wagner said it had nothing to do with the money, but he did come out of retirement, or his announced plan to retire at that time. So he pulled away from Donlin at that time as the season went on. Now, the home-road splits for these three teams were really, really interesting. And the Giants were known, and I haven't studied it for the entire dead ball era, but because of the intensity and perhaps intimidation of John McGraw and the Giants, and you can see this one quote here from a well-known newspaper man, that the Giants won a lot at home. The Cubs had a great road record, but so did the Pirates. And one of the things that I won't have time to get into, and I don't have a total handle on it, is the Pirates did not have nearly the support from the locals that the other two teams had. There was an undercurrent of criticism in the press of some of the Pirate players, which seemed every time they were in a pennant race, whether they were there were different issues that came up. But Fred Clark, the manager of the Pirates, player manager, was somewhat bitter near the end of the season. He said it was the players that did it. Usually, you know, you say we have the greatest fans in the world, that's why we're here, and he didn't quite say that. And perhaps another reason why we forget the Pirates in 1908 is because Fred Clark was not nearly as forceful a personality as McGraw or Chance. Right before the end of the season, he said, and I quote, and the last few days before the convention, I was at the Carnegie Library looking at some Pittsburgh papers, he said, and I quote, "If it should fall to our lot to be the unfortunate ones, we will take off our hats to Frank Chance and his gallant men." Now, that isn't something you'd expect John McGraw to say about the Cubs or anybody. And Fred Clark was really, in an age of ruffians, was really very much of a gentleman. And, of course, Wagner was a very modest fellow also. So here you see these home road records, and we're going to come back to that significance. Now, when I show these slides here, I would say even though your eye may go to the right, start on the left, there's a little bit of chronology here. When I was doing my research, I was getting confused, because was it May 11th or June 11th that Hannes Wagner single-handedly beat the Giants 5-2? And finally, I realized he did it both on May 11th and on June 11th by a score of 5-2. He was extremely respected in New York. Here's one quote, and we'll come back to his fielding a little bit later, but after a game later in the season, the New York Polo Grounds fans really tried to carry him off on their shoulders after a game. That's how much respect they had for him. And again, he wasn't the braggart kind of player, so I think he attracted that. Here on the bottom of the slide on the left-hand side is Mathewson's record against the other two teams, as well as Willis's record against the other two top teams. And as you see, it's 500, barely above 500. We'll pick up the third pitcher in a moment. Now, here are the standings as of the end of June 30th. And one thing that happened in this season is that when one team started playing just barely above 500 ball, they all sort of slowed down to 500 ball. When one team got hot, they all got hot. The significant thing here in the month of June is that the Pirates were playing 500 ball, and then they moved ahead. Now, in early July, Mordecai Brown played the Pittsburgh Pirates, or the Cubs played the Pirates, and Brown beat them on shutouts on one day rest. July 2nd and July 4th, complete game, brilliant games. And if you look back to a moment, maybe where you can always say, "Boy, in a close race, this hurt or that hurt." And look at Brown's record against the Giants and against the Pirates. Far superior to Maddie's or Willis's against the other two top teams. And here's a New York quote about what happened. In July 25th, Wagner destroyed Mathewson. Well, you may have seen a little headline I threw up from one of the papers in New York after this 5-for-5 game. And on July 28th, now, the Pirates were in the lead. It was still a very, very close race. The Pirates had played a four-game series with the Giants. They took two of the games. One of them was a 16-inning tie, a very taut affair. And here's a quote from the Sporting News, the respected writer Joe Villa, that it really seemed that the Giants were outclassed by a much better team. And one of the other things that we see happening over and over again in the season is the greatest crowd ever to see a baseball game ever. And in the Polo Grounds, and that was repeated, and perhaps the records were broken, and we'll see near the end of the season broken and yet broken again. So here we are at the end of July, all bunched up. Now here are a couple of the papers that I pulled have been from the last few days in Pittsburgh when Mathewson was hammered five for five by Wagner. And the other thing that's incredible is. And when Lyle Spatz and I have done work about the Polo Grounds, I never realized to what extent in these early years fans were on the field. And let me tell you, when fans were on the field, and this happened in Pittsburgh also because Exposition Park was so small, the fans were not in a rope behind the outfield. They were there, but they were down the first baseline. They were down the third baseline. They were behind the catcher. It was literally, I mean, this thing says other than 30 degrees. I don't know where the 30 degrees were, but literally fans were everywhere on the field. I sometimes wondered if the foul lines were even visible as the fans would surge over. But again, what happened to Mathewson by Wagner. Now, in the end of August, the teams were, again, still very, very close. The Giants had caught fire. And this comment here is just to note the fact that the New York fans really did respect Wagner, and they gave him big applause, as I said, and that after that one July 25th game, they tried to carry him off the field, and a modest guy and sort of a shy guy, I think he was rescued by his teammates. Now, on the morning of August 24th, the Giants came into Pittsburgh. And if you read the Pittsburgh papers at that time, the city was just on fire, electric. Here was the time that we could really start nailing this thing down. And it was a four-game series, and the Giants on the very first day won a doubleheader. And they then went on to win Game 3 and Game 4. And here a month later, we have a newspaper, albeit a New York newspaper, saying there's no doubt that one of these teams is head and shoulders. A month before, we were hearing it was the Pirates. Now we're hearing that it is the Giants. The four-game sweep, and again, you note here that the attendance, the Pittsburgh fans, after losing the doubleheader, Mathewson won one of the game, Hook Wiltse won the other one, the fans really got very disappointed. The attendance, by the way, of 16,440, I think was at or even above the capacity of the park. Again, this is one more year before, which Bob spoke about yesterday, about the building of Forbes Field. Now, one of the added elements in this season was that Mike Donlin was married to one of the most famous, I guess you would call it, vaudeville comedy actresses in America, Mabel Hyde. And she traveled with him. And there were dramatic games in this series at key points when they said that the crowd was just hushed. You would hear her yelling out, "Mike, hit the ball. And if you don't get a hit..." And there was another game later on in the series, I think game four, that Mathewson won in relief, where he nodded and looked to her and smiled and then knocked in the tying run. So she was a fixture with him on the road. And, of course, in 1907, he had not played baseball because he went on the vaudeville circuit. And so he was back in 1908. Now, again, I'm moving, trying to highlight this, and now we're going to get a few more things that perhaps have been overlooked. September 4th is just sort of a significant note in the season because the Pirates won a critical game against the Cubs. However, there was an incident in that game that many of you may know of where a guy by the name of Warren Gill, who only played 27 games in his major league career, was Fred Merkel 2 weeks before Fred Merkel was Fred Merkel. And it was a classic game. He was on first base. The Pirates scored the winning run. And guess who's the umpire standing there at second base? It's Hank O'Day. Johnny Evers, the Cubs protest the game because Warren Gill did not step on second base. He ran into the dugout after the hit. And again, that's a precursor to that event. And O'Day had a lot of ejections that season, and he certainly wasn't afraid to eject McGraw or Donlin. He ejected Donlin in a game against the Cardinals. And on September 18th, we look here at the standings of the three teams. The thing that jumped out the most is the fact that they all caught fire. I don't know, and maybe someone like Dave Smith or Tom Ruane or Richard could figure out, was there ever a time in a three-week period that the three top teams in a league played more than 750 ball? And they each caught fire, and they couldn't shake the other ones. And that was just a combined, an amazing stretch of baseball for all these teams. Now, on the 18th, the Pirates came into New York, and again, a doubleheader sweep. And the Giants culminating an amazing run, and it really looks like the pennant is, the Pirates are out of this. They're five games back on September 18th. The New York newspapers, and then I found the same things in the Pittsburgh newspapers. For example, one of the Pittsburgh Post said after that doubleheader, "The Giants are joyous tonight because they realize it will be next to impossible for any club to snatch the pennant from their grasps." Maybe they don't have it nailed down against the Cubs, but the Pirates really look to be out of it. And unlike that late August series, the Pirates did rally. They won a dramatic extra inning game the next day. And as you notice, there's a gap in the newspapers because this was New York and not Pittsburgh. Or this was New York again, where there was no Sunday ball. And the Giants lost the fourth game also. So at least the Pirates hung in there. And a lot of controversy, again, involving Hank O'Day. He sort of towers over the season, almost more than any of the players, because he seems to be everywhere. And he made a key call that led to the two-run rally. The Pirates won 2-1. It was in an early inning. It was just a typical close play at first base. And McGraw went berserk. And McGraw was thrown out of the game. And he thus nailed down his fifth consecutive league championship for most ejections in a season consecutively. He had 118 as a manager, and as we were talking the donor meeting, it still is a work in progress. He probably had a few more. And so here we were. So the Giants won that doubleheader, but then all of a sudden they lost the next two games. Now, in one of these games, Mike Donlin, who was a very heavy drinker and also had a violent streak. He went into the crowd and savagely beat up a fan. And this is in New York, a fan that was giving him the hard time. Now, one of the New York newspapers said that he was justified beating the fan up because the fan said something nasty, as you can see in the quote here. But again, Hank O'Day, the Giants were so aggressive, you get that feeling. And Hank O'Day had just thrown Donlin out one or two days before, so he didn't throw him out on this time. When he took, one of the Pittsburgh papers, or one of the papers said it took two policemen to pull Donlin off of the fan when he went into the stands. And, you know, some of the New York press had, you know, had a defense of just want to go back here. Okay, where am I going down? So one of the New York papers was the New York one of the Hearst papers, and Sam Crane of the Hearst paper said that he had played ball with Hank O'Day, and Hank O'Day was the most decent man. And here you also had people that were savaging O'Day for his call. And the season went on, and of course, after this series, we had the Giants losing two games to the Cubs, and then we had the famous Merkle game. And we approached the end of the season, and this is one of the greatest games in Pittsburgh Pirate history. On the morning of October 4th, and Hugh Fullerton described it very dramatically, on the morning of October the 4th, this is what the standings were. Now, the Pirates had a great road record. They had to come into play the game in Chicago. If the Pirates win this game, they win the pennant. As you see, not all teams paid the same amount of games. Fullerton captures the drama that is in here. I left the O'Day figure very big because he really does tower over. And this was a pretty taut game. And in the ninth inning, Ed Abaticchio, first Italian to play in baseball, hit a line drive down the right field line. The score was 5-2 in the ninth inning. Wagner was on first base. It appeared that O'Day called it a fair ball. Then umpire Riegler supposedly told Abaticchio that it was a fair ball. But eventually it got called a foul ball. I don't even know how, if they even had the ability to see the foul line, the way the fans were surging back and forth. So the Pirates lost the game. One of the really sad things in the game was that one player, perhaps the pressure got to him, threw two throws to first base away, and that was Wagner. And it directly led to two runs. I think it even led to more. He did knock in a run. And I have this statistic I just pulled from Baseball Reference. Wagner made a lot of errors, but at the same time, based on his range factor, he had a tremendous range. So he was respected as a tremendous fielder, but at the same time, he did make it. Those are raw numbers, how many errors each of those 6 years he made, between 49 and 60. And this was the final game of the pennant. It was a Sunday night game. What made this game so amazing is that in New York, the entire city of New York was rooting for the Cubs, obviously. The hated Cubs had to win to keep the Giants in this series. And they even opened up the Polo Grounds. They had the big player graph, you know, electric boards. Some of the Giant players were there. Some of the Brave players were there. They were about to start a three-game series against the Giants. And downtown, the newspapers had them on the board, and it was an amazing scene, and New York was cheering wildly for the Cubs, who did pull the game out, and once again, the amazing Mordecai Brown came out on top. Now, what I want to talk about is, now the Giants had three games left, and if they won the three games, remember, the Merkle game had not been awarded. It was ruled a tie. But if the Giants win the last three games of the season, they will end up with the same record as the Cubs. Now, no one knows what's going to happen. If that happens, will there be a three-game playoff because the season is over? Frank Chance thought the pennant was theirs. And again, Fred Clark said, we'll be back next year. And amazingly, the Cubs, after winning three pennants, would win 104 games in the next year, and that wasn't nearly enough. And on Monday, the Giants won the first game against the Braves. They had two more to go. Here's the interesting thing. The National League rules on Tuesday, probably in the middle of the day, that the Merkel game is, the tie game is going to be made up. What people don't realize, and that's why I put it in bold here, is that the Merkel game was going to be played even if the Giants finished the year below the Cubs. I don't know how many people know that. I don't know if that's been emphasized enough. And here you can see what the Spalding Guide said. A lot of newspapers at the time didn't realize it. And what I'm looking at here is, when the ruling was made, the Giants were playing against the Braves. They were only leading 1-0. And that was probably a 3 or 3:30 start. And game three, the Braves were leading 2-0. So what could have happened would be a remarkable state of affairs. And that would have been, what would have happened if the Braves had won one of those three games, and then the Giants got the Merkel game and beat the Cubs. And so, again, to clarify this, the ruling was that that game would be replayed even if the Giants lost the game against the Braves. And we can sort of hypothesize why that was the case. And luckily for the board of the National League, what would have happened? There would have been a three-way tie, a three-game playoff with three teams in a tie. The Pittsburgh Pirates on Monday had dispersed. The paper said, these guys are going hunting, these guys are going to the Midwest, they're going all over the place. The only thing I want to have in closing here is, really, the second best pitcher and the third best player of the National League was really the hero of this season. And in 8 days over the early October, Mordecai Brown was simply amazing. He went then and beat the Giants, and then 2 days later he wins the World Series game in relief. So, thank you very much. Okay, anybody? I don't know how many people that were in the room here realized that that game was going to be... I never realized that the Merkel game was going to be played even if the Giants had lost one of the games against the Braves and ended up below the Cubs in the standings.
Okay, if anyone has questions, we have a mic up here.
The only other thing I would add while he's coming up there is that I've been racking my brain the last few days, why did the National League set up this potential disaster? And I think Harry Pulliam, the president of the National League, I can't prove this, he never said it, even though he was driven to suicide 9 months later, in part over the stress of this situation, he really wanted to give McGraw another chance. And if the Giants had lost one of the Braves games and fallen just short of the pennant, by giving them really two chances, they could lose a game to the Braves and still end up beating the Cubs. Chuck?
So if they would have ended up in a three-way tie, how would the playoff have gone?
You know, it was never explained. And, I mean, you couldn't really have two teams play off and then the winner play the third team. That's not fair. But like I said, the Pirates were cast to the winds. Barney Dreyfus was really odd. He didn't realize this, and he said he was upset he couldn't vote, because he had a piece in the pie, and he said he would have voted to just give the Merkel game to the Cubs. I don't know if he didn't think it through or he was such a gentleman. Yeah, it would be a three-game series, so it would have been some kind of round robin, and the World Series would have been played as late as it will this year. So. Okay? Thank you. If anybody has any questions or comments, I'll be outside.